Thanks so much for coming, everyone. I think the logical place to start is how it all began with the big day and how this thing came to start. Michelle?
So it sort of preceded me, really, in that it was Creative England essentially ran a really interesting scheme which was for developing theatre writers, and actually anomalously one novelist, into people who would be writing for the screen. So they ran this really interesting sort of development program, which was about eight months?
I think it was 6 months, 6 months. And 18 writers, yeah. 18 playwrights, yeah, one novelist. So 17. it was 6 months getting playwrights to think about how they would write for film. So they basically took us away for 6 months and taught us everything that they knew about film, and what the differences were between writing for film and writing for theatre. And as part of that, we all wrote a short film and also wrote a feature treatment as well. And from that, they chose three films to produce.
So they basically said to me, look, we're gonna make three films from what we have. I hadn't at that point read any of the scripts. I didn't know that much about the playwrights, but they said, do you want to produce three short films? And by that point, I produced a lot of short films, so I did definitely have to go, can I do this? It is a bit like going into war producing short films. So I thought, okay, three of them, if we're going to do this, we've got to kind of do it in a really sort of economical way so that I don't essentially end up spending 3 years producing three short films. So they were kind of on board with that. And then myself and it was Paul Ashton and Alice Ramsey, who Alice is here somewhere. There she is. We had the pleasure of reading 18 of these short film scripts and decided on interviewing a few of the writers, and then decided the three short films that we wanted to make. And The Big Day was, one of those, and for us was just a great script. And Kelly had really already kind of made it what it was. We didn't have to develop it much further than that, really. So it sort of started there. And then because we managed to get really great directors, thankfully, Creative England decided to give us a decent budget for all the films. Again, thanks, Alice. So they became something a bit bigger, I think, than perhaps they might have been.
And we should talk about directors as well, because the third Musketeer, Dawn Shadforth, who directed the film, wonderful director, who can't be here. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of like that relationship of you then taking this script that you'd obviously nurtured and developed yourself? It was, one of your first pieces for screen, and then having to hand it over to a director, and kind of what that was like for you and what that journey of script to screen was like.
I think like one of the really unusual things, because I was a playwright, and this was my first, these two films were the first go at film. And I think the unusual thing about the process was that as part of this programme, we got to interview the directors. So we got to meet with four or five directors and talk to them about, why they wanted to do the film and what they liked about it. And, I remember I was meeting Dawn, and Dawn just, wasn't really in for all the kind of bullshit of interviews, to be honest. And she just kind of like sat down with me, and we just kind of made eye contact, and we had a really just a good laugh and a good chat about the film. And from there I knew that, particularly with all of the aesthetics of her music videos as well, that she'd be a really brilliant find for this. And I think the other really unusual thing about it was that we got to workshop the script a little bit with the actors before it actually was filmed. So she wanted a couple of days in Manchester, just making sure that the relationships between the characters felt really convincing and believable. I was part of those rehearsals, and then she also included me on the set as well, which as far as I know feels like quite an unusual process for film, that the writer is so included the whole way through. But she was really, really generous in that sense.
It was very writer-led. We wanted to keep it writer-led because the guys from Creative England had done a scheme that was all about writing and writers, and so it felt important that the writers were then empowered throughout the process instead of kind of, as that often happens with film, sort of dropping away and the director just completely taking over. So we did, Dawn definitely, she was really collaborative, wasn't she? I think she used you as a resource for her understanding of the characters, you know?
Yeah.
So on the characters and sort of, you know, the writing, what kind of inspired this story and this character's journey?
I was thinking about this question and how awkward I always feel in answering these kind of questions.
Sorry, Kelly.
Because it's always deeply personal. I think that there was a couple of things that came about for Osmosis for the film, The Big Day. And there was a wedding that was being planned within the family, and there was lots of debate as to whether one person should come to the wedding and what the conditions might be around this one person coming to the wedding. And I suppose that was in my mind a lot of the time, and I was thinking about what that conversation might look like to do with that person, and what it might feel like to be that person who's, you know, perhaps not accepted at the wedding. I'm also in a step family myself, and I'm really fascinated by step families and all the really complex dynamics that come about through step family relationships. So I knew that those were always in the back of my mind. As happens with ideas, you have lots of different things percolating, and then one thing just brings it to life. Someone told me an anecdote about a girl at a wedding who was invited. She was the bridesmaid, I think, at the wedding, and she picked up a 3-year-old daughter of the bride, span her around, dropped her and broke her arm at the wedding. I think the moment that I heard that, I could see the film, because I knew that we have this character that is, you know, not accepted at a wedding, and that's where we end with the story. So then it just became about what was the story. And as I say, I was really interested in step-family relationships and all the kind of juicy complexness of that. That's a word.
Yeah, very good word.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's, I'm not sure about the audience and who's here, but I think it's quite interesting to talk about production process as well, because making a short film is like going into war and is incredibly challenging. I can say that because I helped make that film, so I know how stressful it was, but very rewarding at the same time. But you had to make specific practical and creative decisions in terms of actually shooting this film on film, which I think is a very rare thing to be done nowadays, and also even rarer with short film as well because of the budget restraints. So it might be interesting to talk about that.
Until very close to shooting, we were not shooting on film. The budget of the film could not accommodate film. So we were shooting on, I don't know how technical you all are, but we were going to shoot on the Alexa, which is a great camera. And so basically a few things changed. So we always wanted Robbie Ryan to shoot the film, who is an amazing kind of world-leading DOP.
Oscar-nominated, BAFTA-nominated.
Yeah. He shot The Favourite, he shot Philomena, like any number of wonderful films. And he worked a lot with Dawn, the director. So he'd shot, he'd known Dawn for many, many years, and I think shot some of her first music videos. So they worked together for ages, so she really wanted him to shoot it. But Robbie is the kind of person that he does, you know, if a massive film might get offered to him at a very short notice, and obviously he's going to take that, so he can't really commit to short films well in advance. So he'd always sort of liked the script and sort of said, oh yeah, I'll do it if I can, which obviously for us was tricky. So we actually did start lining up another DOP to shoot the film, and I was pretty clear with that DOP that we were going to have to shoot this film digitally. Most people don't shoot on film anyway, so he was completely fine with that. But then at fairly short notice, Robbie became available and said, actually, yeah, I can shoot it, and I want to I want to, and I want to come up and do it. So I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Puts in a slightly awkward position with the other DOP.
Awkward.
But, you know, because they had the relationship, that's the most important thing. So they knew each other really well. And, you know, you can't take that for granted. That's so important. So so we thought, okay, yeah, obviously we're gonna let Robbie do it. And then this conversation about film started, which I think I just put my head in the sand to start off with. I was like, no, it's just not possible. They can't really be talking about this. And I think probably made that quite clear. And then essentially we sort of started to look at it. Robbie is incredibly generous. And essentially when Fujifilm stopped trading, he bought all of their remaining film stock. So he has like this film stock in a place in Devon, which again he didn't tell me, which is like 35mm and 16mm film that he uses for his personal project effectively. So he decided that he wanted to use that film on this film. So essentially he sort of said, look, I'll give you the film stock. So that's a huge cost, which was, you know, which we couldn't afford. So this was sort of the only way that we could do it. But even then, it was very, very difficult because the processing costs with film are also huge. But it's, again, you know, Robbie Ryan. So he knows all the processes. He's one of the few DOPs that still shoots on film in this country. So he put us in touch with somebody who could negotiate a deal for the processing, who, funnily enough, I had worked with when I was at the NFTS at film school about 10 years ago. So that was quite nice. So he was like, yeah, I'll do you a favour. Obviously, I thought, well, he's not going to be able to do us enough of a favour for this to become, you know, affordable. But I mean, the deal was unbelievable. It was almost nothing that they charged us. So that, combined with the fact that Robbie decided that he was going to focus pull the whole film himself as well, so that got rid of a whole crew member, as did not needing a DIT anymore, made it a DIT for, sorry, those of you aren't in the industry, is a sort of digital imaging technician. So those are people that are only needed when you're shooting something digitally. So suddenly it kind of evened itself out. However, the problem with shooting on film is that as a producer, you sweat like 20 times more because you actually see the stock going. So you see the film running out. And certainly on the first day, they were just burning through stock. I was like, no, guys, this was not the deal. We don't, you know, the more that they shoot, the more expensive it is. Even though the film was free, the processing was still costing money. So I did have to have a little word in both their ears saying, guys, you're shooting too much. And then as they got into it, they did cut it down and it became okay. So it was, you know, it was nerve-wracking, I have to say. But obviously it looked really good.
Yeah, a blessing, yeah. Really. You talked a little bit about that relationship there between DOP and director. The relationship between producer and writer is obviously one of the first relationships established on a film, and you guys have worked together a few times now, so do you want to talk about that a little bit more, about how that relationship works?
Yeah, well, like I said, we didn't really need to develop the script that much, did we, for the big day?
No.
But so we did try. I remember we kind of tried, and then we just undid like all your great work. So me and Dawn, I remember we kind of we gave you some notes, and you kind of changed some stuff, and then we were like, do you know what? No, it was better. It was better the first time. Yeah. So we ended up putting a lot of stuff back, I think, didn't we?
Yeah. That was quite interesting for me, I think, because. Yeah, I think I realise, like, in a lot of the things that I write, you know, a lot of the drama is in the subtext of things that is happening between the characters, and Dawn was really, really good at observing the small nuances of the script when it came to life. But I think what happened in that second draft was that we tried to make more overt the subtext of the piece and make it more explicit, and that just didn't quite work. We needed to bring it back to what it was. And, yeah, when it was produced, it all came out.
Yeah, I think it was good that we caught that.
Yeah. But the really nice thing was that, through this, we got a relationship, and the other film, To Know Him, you know, you needed a writer, didn't you, for Ted's script. So that came about in a different way. Ted, who directed the film, already had the idea, and you know, he'd already been commissioned, had he, for
I have worked a bit with Ted previously, and we're doing a feature film together that we're shooting next year. And he thought that he sort of put in for this feature, which we'd been developing for a little while. He didn't think, you know, he's self-deprecating, he didn't think he was going to get the money for that. So he said, "Oh, well, I'll pitch this as well to another kind of funder." And then he got both of them, which was surprising to him. But he was like, "I can't write both of them because I don't have the capacity to do that." So I said, "Okay, well, why don't we get Kelly to write it?" So essentially, if we hadn't have done The Big Day, I wouldn't have known Kelly, and I wouldn't have then approached you about this.
Yeah. That film was a very different process. It was extremely collaborative, wasn't it? And there were a number of drafts, and there were lots of notes, and meetups with yourself and with Ted, and you know, it felt like it really was a collaborative effort, wasn't it?
Jen also produced that one, so we were giving notes.
We don't do everything together. It's a bit weird.
No, but again, that was a relationship that started on The Big Day and the two other shorts that I did. Jen, I wanted a production team that would work across all three films, and Jen crazily volunteered for the line producer role, managing that, and out of that I then approached you about to know him, because that, you know, we'd had a good relationship. So there's a lot of kind of organic progression, I think, across projects.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing, again, I don't want to presume that everyone in the room is filmmakers or creatives, but like, you never know where certain relationships are going to take you. And you know, I can certainly chart my career in terms of people that I said, "Oh, go on, I'll do that." And then through that I met X, and then through I met Y. And I think, like, you know, you just, there's no excuse for getting out there and making stuff, because you actually never know where it's going to take you. So just how painful it is or whatever, obviously the, you know, the rewards can be great and the relationships can be great. Gonna start moving over now to just asking you guys if you want to ask any questions at all. Has anyone got anything burning for Kelly or Michelle?
Where was the Big Day shot? Sorry.
Down the road.
All the three films that Michelle was talking about that were produced together were shot in Manchester.
Oh, okay.
And Wilmslow, wasn't it? Yeah, Wilmslow Hotel.
It was in Wilmslow, but it was the Deansgate Hotel. In Wilmslow.
The Deansgate.
Yeah. Deanswater.
I can't actually remember the name of the hotel we produced it at.
It was Deanswater.
Manchester. Yeah. Greater Manchester.
Yeah.
And that was very difficult to negotiate, a hotel giving you over their entire conference suite for a film set, and then getting them to cater for you and it not feel like a really crap banquet or like a beige buffet and things like that. So, yeah, but it was great, and obviously the production values shine through.
Yeah, we needed a place that was sort of big enough but also small enough, because obviously we couldn't afford hundreds of extras, you know. So it was kind of, that place had a certain feel to it and had a certain time period with it that actually I think dictated quite a lot of the aesthetic of the film.
How long a shoot was it?
It was 3 days. Yeah, so we did it. I was a bit hardcore about the schedule, because I knew that, so with the three films that we were shooting, we did them back to back. So we did 3 day shoot, 1 day off, 3 day shoot, 1 day off, 3 day shoot. And I, you know, we did that on purpose because I wanted to be able to use all of the budgets together to get the best value for money effectively for all of the films. So we employed crew for 2 weeks, you know, which was easier to get a crew for 2 weeks than it would have been for 3 days, you know, because it's a bit of a longer job. So yeah, it was sort of all about that, really. And so we did think about that, the practical stuff, didn't we, as well, like when it came to script. Luckily, this script in particular was quite contained, wasn't it? But we had 2 days in the hotel, essentially, and then 1 day out and about at various different locations.
How many rolls of film did you use?
Oh, God.
How many rolls of film?
Now, film comes in different sizes, so it's a hard one to answer, but it was 30. I think it was...
Is it 100 foot or 400 foot in a can?
It's a 400 and 1,000 is the measurements, but I think it was quite a lot. actually.
Pardon?
Was it 35?
It was 16.
16.
Yeah, I think it was... I think it was 30,000 feet. So actually, it was quite a lot. It was. Yeah.
Have you got any advice? Oh,
thank you.
Have you got any advice for newer or emerging filmmakers, particularly those who aren't based in London?
Do you want to do that one?
Oh, I'm not nodding. I don't really. I think I kind of said it before, and this is a really crap answer, but like, get out and find your networks and make stuff. It doesn't matter if you have like £100 or £300 or whatever, you've got to start cutting your teeth and you've got to start forming your team and you've got to start making stuff to have something to show and also to learn from. You know, it's a really, really long journey in terms of getting to where you might want to be in your career, and all of those little experiences and all those little problems that you have along the way teach you everything that you need to know. And don't think because you're outside of London that that is a negative. Like, it's a USP, it's a smaller pool that you're in, and you're a bigger fish, and you have something distinctive about it. And, you know, for the more sort of creative people in the room, as opposed to technical, find the stories that only you can tell, and find what your USP is as a storyteller as well, because ultimately that's what punches through, and that's what is more interesting to commissioners or interesting to funders, is the voice that you bring to it and the story that you tell that comes from the regions or comes from outside of London. And ultimately that will shine through, but you've just got to get out there and make stuff.
And there is a network here. So the BFI has a presence in this room, in fact. Where are you?
Not yeah. In a spiritual way.
Presence in the region. So, you know, there is a bespoke kind of there are programs, development programs, a little bit like the writer scheme that we're talking about, and there's funding as well. So there's like sort of funding to write like your first feature treatment. There's funding to make shorts. So, you know, it's obviously, it is competitive, you know, and the film industry is very competitive, but you do have people here that are accessible, which is great.
Hi, because you did the production all together, did you happen to have casting that went like cross the way? So maybe you casted somebody initially for a role in one film, and then when you saw them, you said like, you know what, maybe they work better for the other one.
Yeah, we didn't ever do it quite like that. But yes, we had one casting director that cast all three films. And there was definitely crossover in kind of, there were a lot of sort of self tapes sent in initially, and initial auditions where we kind of thought, I suppose the thing is that I was the one that was across all three films, but the directors weren't. The directors were all on individual films. So in the back of my head, there was kind of something going, oh, that person might be good for this, that person might be good for that. But obviously, I couldn't really say that to the directors because I didn't want it to seem like I was poaching people they liked for another person's film. But actually, how it ended up kind of falling out was that no one really liked the same people. The director didn't like the same people for the films. And the only time when there was really any fruitful crossover was Moen, who directed a short film called Real Gods Require Blood. He did a lot of casting, sort of initial workshops with children in schools. So he came up to Manchester way in advance of the other directors because he had two very difficult roles for children in his film. And so he went to loads of schools, and then I think we auditioned about 100 children for that particular film. And out of those auditions, we found the girl that was in The Big Day. So the little girl. So there was, that was a crossover. But otherwise, yeah, not too much. Yeah.
Any last question? Got 1 minute left? No? Oh, one.
Oh, oh, got, oh, two now.
Two, competitive.
So what's happened to the dress?
Oh. I think the costume designer's got it.
Yeah. It's probably on another production right now.
But I tell you what, the dolls were prized, because the little girl really wanted her doll,
And I ended, yeah, I gave that to, I had to wait until like, I'm not sure. I had to wait until we definitely didn't need to do any reshoots and then gave it to her. I'm sure I've still got
one. There's one more guy at the back.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. I'm running over.
I just have a quick question for Kelly. I just wondered how much you were involved in the casting process.
Yeah.
And how alike the actors that you cast were to the characters that you'd written or preconceived, or if that changed, and just...
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually, because, I wasn't actually at the casting, but they sent videos to us, and in the end, there were three different girls lined up for the part of Jess, and it made me realise that had you cast either one of them, it would have been a very different telling of the story. One was...
quite young,
one was quite young and quite quite troubled looking, and I think it would have given a very different slant on the story. Another was, you know, much bigger girl, and it would have made the parts of Trish and the family look a lot meaner, and it be a lot more about looks and all of that. But I think as soon as we saw Jennifer, I knew that was what I had in mind for Jess, that she would be this really kind of, have that real quirky, innocent, slightly annoying quality to her. I think even the details of, it was interesting when they interviewed me for the script, and I didn't yet have the knitting in the script, and I remember being interviewed and coming up with that idea in the interview. Because it just hadn't quite clicked for me. But I think as soon as we had the knitting detail about her, and that was not the plum but threaded throughout, that brought the quirk of that character to life. But absolutely, it was Jennifer,
when I saw her.
Thank you so much, everyone, for sitting through the films and also sitting through us.
Yeah.
So
I think there's drinks in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Drinks.
Have a drink.
We'll be around as well.
Thank you.